You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
And this is Rick Franzi, your host for today's installment of Critical Mass, the radio show beamed around the world exclusively and live here on octalkradio.net. As you know, my business partner Doug Geveller and I co-host this business talk show, which airs on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays at 4 p.m. live and heard anytime via our MP3 podcast library available on Apple iTunes and a variety of other podcasting services. Our goal for this show is the same goal that we have for our entire business practice, which is to help business owners and top executives make better, more informed decisions. On the show, we do that by interviewing thought leaders and executives who have transferable knowledge and experiences. Our radio show is an extension of our 16-year business practice. One of the things that we do is we build CEO peer groups, and we do that in partnership with Renaissance Executive Forums, an international organization with 1,200 members, serving CEOs and business owners and helping them take their business to the next level. Doug and I currently lead multiple CEO peer groups here in Orange County, California. We also do extensive executive coaching and management development. Doug is our lead principal partner on our coaching practice, which is branded The Coaching Perspective. Doug is a master certified coach, one of less than 900 coaches that have gone through this level of training and received this level of certification and distinction in the world. Recently, my book, Critical Mass, has been called The Definitive Guide to the CEO Peer Group Experience. It's available, in case you're interested, for sale on Amazon.com. The best way to find it is by typing my name, which is Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about our CEO Peer Group business, our coaching practice led by Doug, or any of the other things that we do here within our boutique consulting firm, feel free to check out our website, which is www.criticalmass4business.com. All right, let's turn our attention to our two guests today. I'm so excited to have on Critical Mass, the radio show, Stuart Blake and Michael Oswald of the General Counsel. We're going to be spending the entire show today with these two gentlemen. And so, Michael and Stuart, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thanks, Rick. Glad to be here.
Thanks, Rick. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, let's get right into the interview, and I'd ask you both to share with our audience your respective professional paths to the firm, the General Counsel.
Yeah, I'm going to start with that one, Rick, and this is Michael. I have a bit of a non-standard career path. After I got out of law school, I worked as a contract administrator in the computer biz back during the mainframe days. And then I hung out a shingle and did whatever came in the door kind of law. Ran screaming from that, became a buyer in the aerospace business, worked my way out to Austin, Texas, and from there Colorado Springs, all with in the aerospace business. And then got into a government contracts construction claims consulting practice where I represented construction contractors who had contract disputes with the feds. And then moved back to Austin, Texas, and worked in a high-tech research and development consortium, none of which was practicing law. So only three of the 16 years out of law school did I actually practice law, so naturally I should become general counsel of a software startup in Austin at that point. And I've been doing general counsel work ever since because I found that it really did draw on all of those diverse experiences and gray hair and battle scars that I had accumulated over those years. And then that got me from Austin to Orange County about 10 years ago, where I've continued to do general counsel work primarily for high-tech companies, but also construction industry companies. And then Stuart and I formed this company a little over 5 years ago.
So this is Stuart, and let me give a description of my background. It's a little bit different than Michael's, and I consider myself a career in-house attorney with a brief stint out of law school in a law firm. I spent 6 years in-house with Burger King Corporation and then 5 years, or actually another 6 years as general counsel with Baskin-Robbins, and then 5 years as general counsel with Kinko's. And although I've relocated probably as many times as Michael, the focus of my legal career has been on as an in-house practitioner, and of course, 11 of those years as a, or 12 of those years as a general counsel, and with a focus on consumer goods and more recently technology.
Well, you two guys certainly bring diverse background and experiences to the partnership and to the firm, the general counsel. That I'll be interested in, as we go through this interview, to sort of get a sense from both of you, your perspectives on some of the things that we're going to be talking about. Because while you share much of common experience, you also have a diverse and separate background, which I think is probably a strength for people that do business with the general counsel.
Yeah, thank you. We see it that way.
Okay. Well, okay. Now let's talk about the general counsel. So if from each of your perspective, if you could share with us, you know, tell us more about what the firm does, and with particular focus and interest I have is on how is your firm differentiated in the marketplace based on your service offering?
Let me start on that one. And the first point I want to bring out is that the general counsel is not a law firm. We are a legal staffing firm that does the marketing and is a staffing platform for independent general counsels who have probably 10 to 15 years at least experience as in-house general counsels. And then these individuals work on-site at our client offices for what's usually a flat monthly fee or flat project fees. We provide interim and part-time in-house legal solutions to both public and private small and middle-sized companies, typically with revenues between $20 million to $200 million, although we have clients that are certainly smaller than that, and we've had clients that are a little bit bigger than that. Our focus is on what a general counsel usually does, and that is to focus on the day-to-day legal issues of our clients, really on a preventative or proactive basis versus the more typical reactive on how a company would use an outside law firm. So as I indicated, we do work on-site. We become part of the management team of the company, and our typical engagement is one day a week on a regular recurring schedule when we go in and work with that client.
Yeah, Rick, you mentioned diversity that Stuart and I bring to the party. I wanted to mention that there are 14 of us now in the partner group, and we live all the way up and down California from San Francisco to San Diego. And we come from not only different geographies, but different industries and different career backgrounds. One of our partners used to be in-house for a real estate development company. Another one actually owned a construction company. Another one came from the entertainment industry. We've got three of our partners are actually patent lawyers. Three of them have been general counsel for life science companies, healthcare, insurance. One of our partners has a particular expertise and passion in counseling not-for-profits. And so, and in addition to the law stuff that we've done, some of our people have worked as engineers or IT professionals, industrial relations managers, and from all across the country. And also one of our partners lived and worked in the United Kingdom, where she also became licensed to practice law over there.
So what did you guys see? Or, Stuart, it's my understanding that you kind of started the general counsel. Is that correct? And what if that's correct, then what did you see in the marketplace that said, you know, small and mid-market companies need this service, and this is the right thing to do to create a company around this type of service model?
Well, this is what happened, Rick. Back in 2004, I found myself in transition – from a general counsel job that I had left, and I was working on a number of contract assignments. And as I was doing that, I identified that there was a gap for small and mid-sized companies where they were really too small to hire their own full-time general counsel. And they were also, they couldn't afford, and they struggled with paying the law firm billing rates that are now in the $500 to $800 an hour range. And as I was working on these contract assignments, I kept noodling with this idea of part-time general counsel work. And it was, you know, the same time in the marketplace that outsourcing was growing as a as an offering, and increased use of interim and part-time executives was becoming more popular, and I didn't see any other players out there doing part-time general counsel type of services, and thought it was a great business model, so started to morph what I was doing into that. And Michael and I had known of each other and worked with each other as board members of the Corporate Counsel Association of Southern California, and as we kept crossing paths, I grabbed him one day and said, you know, let's go to lunch and sit down and talk about this business idea that I have, and here we are 5+ years later, and it's worked out really well, and we have clients from San Diego up into the Bay Area in California.
Yeah, I wanted to add that all of the years of experience that we had have had as working on the inside as part of the management team taught us that managements make better strategic decisions if they have business-savvy lawyers participating in the strategic conversation. We help flesh out or round out the sophistication of the management team. And that means that I like to call ourselves business people who happen to have law degrees, not to diminish any of the legal expertise that we bring to the table, but to point out that we've got all of those the business wisdom that we've gained the hard way as well, and that reinforced the idea that we could really help small to medium-sized companies that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford having access to that kind of experience and expertise.
Well, a lot has been written over the past few years, and I have direct experience with other firms that have an interim executive model, and it is really, to me, both from my direct experience and what I've learned from kind of what's been written about, this is a phenomenon that has really taken hold over the past few years, and people are really understanding now the value of people at the C-suite doing interim work. And so I'm wondering how that trend, I guess, has affected and kind of extended into what would have been an area, frankly, before I discovered your company and learned about what you guys were doing, the area of general counsel. So are you comfortable maybe just sharing with us for a minute the acceptance and adoption of this model within the client base that you're currently working with?
Yeah, and I think it's similar to any other new product that comes into the marketplace where there's more innovative companies that are open to accepting it early on, and then those groups that are more conservative, and once they see that the product or service is popular, they're willing to jump in on it. That's been our experience, and I'd say the majority of our existing clients have used some type of interim or part-time services, and perhaps has even used some outsourcing, so that they're familiar with the business model, and it makes that decision-making easier. And that's one of the challenges that we have is getting the word out, educating small to mid-sized companies that they do have an alternative to using a big law firm, and they have an alternative to hiring a full-time employee. And when they can't afford to hire a full-time employee, it's more typically someone who's been a junior associate at a law firm and doesn't have the depth or the experience that one of our general counsels brings with them to the management team. And I'll give you a great example of it for a client that I worked with recently who was a business that was here in Orange County for 20 years and didn't have their own dedicated general counsel. I started the engagement doing one full day a week, and the first day I was in the office, the CEO, who was the principal owner, walked into my office and talking to me about a number of business issues and basically said, I got to tell you, I just feel so good about this because I've never had a person like you that I could walk down the hall, have a discussion not only about legal issues but about business issues, because you have this understanding about business and you bring so much more to the party than I've ever had available to me before. So we really are providing, you know, much, much more than just review of a contract or review of a lease. It's bringing a special expertise to the small and mid-sized business owners.
Well, it's clear that you're entrepreneurs as well. You've created a firm and you're growing it. And you're bringing in other partners as the firm continues to grow and expand. So your earlier points that you bring more to the table because of the fact that you're a peer business executive and owner as well really resonates with me, because I do think you bring probably an awareness to your engagements that others who are not the CEO or the managing partner, the principals of their firms, really can't appreciate, because until you are one, you really can't understand all that's entailed with how you have to make decisions. So I think that's a wonderful element of your business and the way you two have structured your firm.
Thank you.
Okay. Shifting subjects now, I guess I'd like to ask you both and give me a sense for, of all the things that you guys have learned as you've built and grown the general counsel, is there a guiding principle that you're using to lead your business practice today?
Yes, there is. Our guiding principle is to help as many people as we can. We are very relationship-driven. While we like to focus on the business issues, we also really enjoy building relationships with our clients and nurturing those relationships over time. And we also love helping other experienced general counsel find opportunities to apply their skills in ways that they maybe hadn't considered before. And as Stuart kind of touched on the illustration of the CEO who began to rely on him as a sounding board, we really do become trusted advisors. In fact, in many cases, one of us as the general counsel will be a CEO's most closely trusted advisor. It's not always the case, but it often is. And it's just the nature of what we bring to the table and the way we approach it. As I said, we're very relationship-driven.
Well, it makes perfect sense to me, Michael and Stuart, that you would develop and evolve into that trusted advisor role, and maybe regularly the most trusted advisor, because of the nature of the conversations that probably happen and the issues and challenges that you're presented with and how you help them through it. I could see that as a very natural progression in your working relationship with your clients. So thanks for sharing with our audience your guiding principle that you're applying to your firm, the general counsel. You know, we're talking about sort of an educational factor here, helping mid-market and small companies understand that the service is first available and second how it can benefit them, and sort of comparison to the alternatives. But could you share with our audience what you both have found to be some common misperceptions that, you know, fast growth mid-market business owners and companies have about using in-house counsel?
Yeah, let me start with that one. Probably the biggest one is that many CEOs or business owners really don't know what a general counsel is or does. You know, there is a lot of confusion over this. And a general counsel is essentially an attorney who's a member of the management team who gets involved in the strategic planning of the company and the day-to-day decision-making and advises the company on risk associated with those business decisions. Michael often uses the analogy that a general counsel is much like a family physician who focuses on prevention of illnesses, and then when a person gets sick, refers the patient out to a specialist. And that's our job. We deal with the day-to-day issues, the contracts, the leases, the intellectual property issues. We're involved with the management team on decision-making. But when there is a specialized matter like a patent application or a litigation or a complicated merger or acquisition, we bring in outside counsel, and we work with outside counsel, and we manage the relationship with outside counsel. So we're not doing everything ourselves, but we're there very much like that family physician, and guiding and trying to prevent and proactively take care of the health of the company. The next misperception that we find is that there's a thought that we're there to replace the company's existing law firm. And again, it's not the case at all. We generally complement and manage the relationship with outside law firms. So oftentimes when we're meeting with prospective clients, they say, oh, I already work with XYZ law firm. And we go, and our response is, great. You know, that's excellent. They're an excellent firm, and we'd want to maintain that relationship with them so long as it's providing value to you as a company, and ask for an introduction to meet those outside lawyers. We think it's essential that a company has a relationship with an outside law firm, and we're there, again, like I said, to help manage that relationship and make sure that it's used cost effectively. The next misperception that's out there is a CEO or business owner will oftentimes think that they have a handle on all of the legal exposures, when more typically it's only the tip of the iceberg that they have knowledge of or that they're aware of. So to help business owners with that, we've created a business risk assessment where we spend for a flat fee a day to a day and a half on-site with the client, interviewing the executives, talking to middle management, to really help them to get a more complete picture of what those exposures are. And we'll talk about more about that risk assessment later, but essentially we're there to open the closet doors, look inside, what's inside the file cabinets, look under the carpeting to see those hidden legal risks and exposures that don't typically percolate up to the knowledge of the CEO or primary business owner.
Another common misperception is that business owners and CEOs think that lawyers are only for big issues like litigation. But if you've got a general counsel who becomes part of the fabric of your organization, that general counsel can facilitate commerce, we can help grow revenue, and we can also help solve problems while they're small. For example, if an employee is unhappy about how they're being treated in the workplace, if you've got a general counsel who's regularly keeping a finger on the pulse of the organization, that unhappiness can be surfaced and effectively handled while it's still a small annoyance, rather than waiting for something to blow up and the lawsuit gets filed and now you've got a really big, expensive, ugly mess. So a general counsel being on the inside and looking after the overall business, it allows us to be aligned with the client's interests. Another misperception among owners and CEOs is that they think they can't afford to have an ongoing relationship with a business lawyer. Well, we have a flexible, affordable model that provides the business and legal wisdom that management needs. A lot of our clients have increased and decreased their level of effort or the amount of the time that they use us over time as their business needs change. I brought in a client 5 years ago who's still with us, and I started 2 days a week, went up to 3 days a week, actually got up to 4 days a week when some really heavy business activity was taking place, dropped down to 1 day a week, and then kind of leveled off at 2 days a week. And we're very flexible. We work based on what the client needs, and as we all know, the needs of a business change over time. And we're also contemplating rolling out another additional flexible model. Stuart, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, what Michael's referring to is we're calling it the small company general counsel solution, and essentially it is, for a flat fee, we're proposing for small businesses that perhaps are not ready for a full one-day-a-week engagement with the general counsel, where they would pay a very small flat fee per month, which would entitle them to unlimited phone calls to their assigned attorney during that month, up to 2 hours of contract review and drafting each month. Also, a quarterly face-to-face meeting or consultation with the attorney, and that flat fee would also include unlimited corporate minutes, annual minutes, and other board meeting and shareholder meeting preparation. It would include an employee handbook update one time per year, and also inclusion in our general counsel client newsletter. So we're trying to address the varying needs of both small and middle market companies by being very flexible in the type of service offerings that we can provide to them so that they can get access to a more senior level general counsel at an affordable rate.
Rick, one final misperception that I think is pretty widespread is that the CEOs and owners of the small to medium-sized businesses underestimate the benefits of having a senior-level trusted advisor because, as we've discussed, a general counsel serves as a sounding board and not just as someone who provides timely and accurate answers to legal questions.
Gentlemen, that was quite a comprehensive. And I would expect nothing less from professionally trained, detail-oriented professionals such as yourself. But I really appreciate, you know, a lot of the goal for our show, as I said at the open, is to help people make better, more informed decisions. And as I write about in my book, Critical Mass, business owners, the thing that I worry about the most with them is what they don't know they don't know. You know what I'm saying? Many times they know what they don't know, and as soon as they recognize that and it's in their conscious mind, they set about learning about it, and that can be a variety of different ways that they get about it. But I'd have to think in the area of your expertise and the type of service that you provide to your clients, there has got to be just a ton of things that you are able to help them to become aware of that until they have the experience, they're not even maybe putting it up on their radar screen that they even have to be concerned with it. So thank you for sharing such a comprehensive list of common misperceptions that you're finding with mid-market companies.
Thanks, Rick. And I think in a little bit, Michael's going to talk about the business risk assessment that we do, which is really a tool for helping the CEO, CFO, or business owner get a handle on the various risks associated and issues facing their company, and at the same time, get a feel for what it would be like to work with a general counsel on a regular basis, because we're there in the office, we're available to them, they have FaceTime with us. So it really is a unique opportunity for them during that day and a half to spend some time with us and learn more about the types of services that we could provide to them. And it's very low risk because they're paying for a risk assessment, which is no obligation to retain our services, but gives them an opportunity to kick the tires a little bit and try out our services while we're providing them with some valuable work product at the same time.
Well, you know, actually, let's kind of get into that. Then I'm going to ask you about an unresolved challenge facing your business. But before I do that, you know, can you share maybe some aha moments that you've experienced with the risk assessments, and then also sort of help me and the audience to understand better this day and a half and the risk assessment in general, because I think it's a very intriguing idea, and I'd like you to share a little bit more of that with the audience, if you would, at this point.
Yeah, Rick, let me take the lead on that. The risk assessment is a structured process that gives management what we like to, what we know is an unbiased view of their company's business and legal risks, and also a clearer picture of what they're doing to manage those risks. We spend a full day interviewing the key players on the management team and also any other key individuals who you may not think of as critical players. But if it's, let's say, you're running a distribution company, well, the loading dock supervisor is a critical player in that operation. And so, you know, we'll spend 30 minutes just talking to the loading dock supervisor and matching her perception of how things are going with the CEO's perception. And some of the big ahas often are in what's really happening versus what the CEO thinks is happening. And you don't get that unless you have the conversations with the right people in the right places in the organization. So we, as I said, we spend a day interviewing, looking over certain documents, and then we go off and spend, you know, a fair amount of time kind of thinking about and synthesizing our notes and observations, and then come back and give a presentation to the management team that says, okay, these areas, these are green. You guys are doing a terrific job of identifying and managing those risks in that area. You got some here that are yellow. You've got some risks that you're not completely on top of, but nothing that's likely to be a big problem for you. You've got three exposures here that are red, and you really do need to pay immediate attention to those, and here's what we recommend you do about them. So then the benefits, obviously, are it's an excellent way to do a focused, efficient inventory of both the business risks and the legal issues that they should be addressing on a proactive basis and may not be. It provides a method that prioritizes and scopes their risk management activities, and it gives the management team a succinct big-picture overview of the business and legal issues and laws that they should be aware of, and it also uncovers issues before they become problems, and it reveals areas where their current practices may have been really good but now need to be updated because laws have changed. Here in the People's Republic of California, laws change a lot. And some of the ahas that we've been able to bring to the attention of management and have them take immediate action to fix, a surprising number of companies think that if they simply classify all of their employees as exempt, then they don't have to pay them overtime. Some companies I've seen have even classified their receptionist as exempt, thinking that that's all they had to do is call them exempt, therefore they are exempt. We know that's not the case, but you know, some people like to kid themselves into believing the otherwise. Some corporations don't hold annual shareholder meetings or regular board meetings, and that creates a risk that if their corporation harms a third party, and that third party wants to come back and get access to the personal assets of the business owners, not just the assets that are inside the corporation. That ugly process is known as piercing the corporate veil. If the owners of the business haven't been treating the corporation the way they're supposed to, if they've been disregarding the corporate form, then third parties who want to sue and go after the owners' personal assets have a very solid argument that they should also be allowed to disregard that corporate form. We often find that companies use independent contractors to develop software for them, but they don't have a written agreement for the independent contractor to assign the copyright to the company. And so the company finds itself in the unenviable position of having paid someone to to create software that that third party now actually owns from a copyright standpoint. So those are issues that we've helped surface, and we've helped the business owners and CEOs take corrective action.
Yeah, and there's also a couple of other aha moments that I've had doing risk assessments. The first is that many companies don't have an effective document storage and retention policy or procedures, which is a critical thing if they're ever faced with a litigation and need to go through discovery and find themselves with either old, outdated documents that sometimes can have a smoking gun in them, or they're throwing out documents too soon and not retaining them according to the law, and technically are in violation of the law. The other area that I've run into from time to time is a company that's in a highly regulated industry is not in compliance with their current regulations. And these are the types of things that we can find out typically through having conversations with the management team at the company and taking a very high-level look at what their activities are and what's going on in the company. So on the few instances where I've done a risk assessment, it's been very effective. We spend a day on site, and then we come back in, as Michael indicated, having digested the information, and we're able to sit back down with the management team and talk about our findings. And oftentimes, you get this look of, wow, I didn't realize that was going on here. I really need to address that. So it has had that impact, and we think it's a great tool for CEOs and CFOs to utilize to really get a good handle on what legal and business issues they have in their company that they're not currently aware of.
You know, as you guys were going through that, I was thinking a couple things. One, you know, tone at the top is important, and it's what the CEO, business owner, puts focus on that the organization creates an awareness about and makes a priority. And so this risk assessment kind of sets that tone, as well as educates the management team and executive team on some potential areas that they have to focus on. But also, it kind of creates and demonstrates what's important to them, so that in the unfortunate situation where they have an issue, they can demonstrate sort of, well, we did something and this is what we're doing about it. So they sort of get the credit for making this important to them. So I have to believe, in addition to a paper trail and action items and the fact that they made a priority of this, that it also sort of helps the culture of the company, I would think, a little bit, to have this type of a regular annual risk assessment review and update to bring up issues that they need to be aware of and sort of impact the way people look at these issues within the company too. Is that accurate?
Oh, it's definitely accurate. And your point is that the tone is set at the top is exactly right. When the company knows that the CEO or the owner of the company is concerned about uncovering risk in the organization, then employees are going to be much more diligent about preventing those types of issues.
It's sort of a self-reinforcing mechanism too, and I believe it's like an annual physical probably for an individual. It's a good idea to have a checkup, because you don't know what you don't know, to come back to maybe my original point. So
exactly.
I guess I'd like to ask you guys, you know, is there a challenge that you're currently facing in the business that you would like to, you know, not only talk about the challenge, but maybe how you guys are planning to mitigate that challenge within your business?
Sure, I'm happy to take that one. You know, our business is not unlike other businesses. We may be providing legal services, but it's the same challenge as other companies that are trying to sell either a product or a service, and that is getting the word out. And it really is all about marketing. And, you know, our challenge is getting the word out to the business owners or CEOs who could benefit from having a part-time general counsel. You know, we don't have a lot of capital to support a major ad campaign and put banner ads or the like in newspapers and magazines. So we try to address that challenge in part by using social media and other tools like that. So we're active on Twitter. We have a general counsel Facebook page. Both Michael and I and our other partners are active on LinkedIn. We have a blog on our website where we post articles and blog entries that try to address issues that CEOs or CFOs or other executives might be interested in. We try to do as many speaking engagements as we can. And, of course, you know, we try to do interviews like this in order to spread the gospel about what we're doing and that there's a different way of getting legal services these days than using a traditional law firm or hiring a full-time employee.
That is a constant challenge for all of us who unfortunately don't have unlimited budgets for marketing and promotion. Not that any company that I've ever worked for, regardless of their size, has ever felt they have enough money to, you know, obviously promote themselves in the marketplace. But for mid-market companies and small companies, and it's a constant challenge. And and that's why we like to have on the show people who are using social media tools, because I am convinced as a business owner myself that these are very democratic tools that allow us to get a voice in the marketplace rather inexpensively. But even more important, from my perspective, it allows us to find like-minded individuals and executives to build a community around. And I'm really excited to see, like in the next few years, where this whole social network arena goes, helping businesses to really connect with others in the marketplace.
And we agree with that. And I think the legal industry as a whole is just trying to get their arms around and figure out how they play a role in social media. And, you know, we like to think of ourselves as being on the forefront of that, as already out there and actively involved in creating those relationships. And, you know, we hope that that will be another differentiator for us in the marketplace.
A couple additional questions, gentlemen, and then we will be concluding the interview. But before we do that, I got to ask you, you know, tell me about a respective painful business lesson that you guys have kind of gone through, and sort of what the lesson that you took away from that painful experience was, and how it's kind of you've applied it in the general counsel in your business practice today.
Yeah, let me take that one first. I grew up in the household of an engineer who spent 36 years working for one corporation. And he started in 1959, he retired in 1995, and he was my role model. He, you know, kept his nose to the grindstone, advanced in the company, did a good job for them, and everything worked out just the way that we had all been led to believe it was supposed to. And then things kind of changed when I got into the work world. But there I was with that as my role model, so I thought working with my nose to the grindstone would be sufficient. And then along came a big change to my employer. I was working for that research and development consortium in the semiconductor industry in Austin at the time, and our budget got cut in half. And so my position was one of those in the half that got cut. So that was the bad news. The good news is I got into an outplacement program, and my counselor is somebody who really helped me understand the importance of developing a network and doing it with the give first and then, you know that things will turn out way of looking at the world, the pay it forward mentality, if you will, and the importance of building and nurturing a network of people who I could help and who could help me.
So from my perspective, I think there's two. One is to stay focused on a work-life balance, and that was reinforced for me when I was general counsel at Kinko's, and the company there spent a lot of time making sure that people balance their lives, not only work, but life and family. And I've always tried to work by the rule of getting home in time to have dinner with the family. The other important lesson for me, I think, is sharing experiences and asking for help outside of the company when necessary. And I think it underscores the value of CEO and other like peer groups, such as what you run, Rick, with Critical Mass and Renaissance Executives Forums, which give business leaders the opportunity to not only share ideas, but also talk about problems and challenges and hopefully find solutions with their peers. So I would reinforce that as a as very beneficial for business owners.
I sense a community feeling emerging even more in the Orange County business community, the business leaders we have here on the radio show, the members in our peer groups, the people that we coach. And I really think it is a byproduct, if you will, of these hard times that the recession has put many companies under stress and really caused people to think maybe a little bit differently about the value of those relationships. And many times corporate executives have a strong network up but don't have a strong network locally, because their networks may be international or their company headquarters may be in different cities. And so my experience is many times they work very hard at doing a good job inside their silo, but when they need to look around and say, hey, I live in Orange County and I don't know very many people here. I know more people in Detroit, if that's where your corporation is headquartered, sometimes than I do on a professional level here in my own business community. And I find that to be very unfortunate. It's not like politics, but there's a lot of business that is local, and those relationships can be very powerful if you, especially what you said, Michael, if you have a pay it forward type of mentality.
Yeah, the other dynamic is that many executives have experienced operating a company, especially in the last 10 years, on an upward growth curve. And when you get into a tough economy, it takes a different skill set and a gut check to be able to manage a company. And oftentimes, executives are reluctant to talk with their own executive team about those types of issues. So it helps to have an outside resource to do that as well.
Excellent. Hey, guys, I'm going to be wrapping up the interview, but before I do that, is there anything else about you or the general counsel that I've not asked you that you would like to mention to our audience today?
Well, I think what I'd like to mention is that, you know, and we've touched upon this before, that, you know, a lot of businesses in today's economy are finding very turbulent times, and what we're seeing is that a lot of them are taking a wait-and-see approach with their business, and we would just like to put the word out there, and we've talked to our own clients about this, is now is the time when you want to be doing those things to position yourself to grow your company in the future. And we think one of those things is doing the business risk assessment, so you can make sure that there's nothing lurking in the background that's going to slow you down as the economy starts to improve and you're out there trying to grow your business. And what Michael and I would like to offer for the listeners is that companies that engage us to do a business risk assessment in response to this show, and then who sign up with the general counsel for an ongoing relationship, we're happy to give them a credit of half of their risk assessment fee against their future billing. So we hope that there are some listeners out there who would take advantage of that. There's no obligation with it, and we think it's a great tool to utilize as they're focusing on growing their company for the future. And, Rick, do you mind if I give our contact information?
I was just going to say, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about the general counsel?
Well, good. So our website is at www.thegeneralcounsel.net. Our local phone number is 949-288-6800, or toll free, it's 866-662-6642. We have a blog at blog.thegeneralcounsel.net. You can follow us on Facebook under The General Counsel. I'm on Twitter, and my
Twitter handle is at General Counsel, and you could find both Michael and I on LinkedIn as well, and just do a search on our names, and we'll pop up there. So we look forward to hearing from people. And Rick, we want to thank you for the opportunity to have the discussion with you today and be a guest on your show.
Well, Stuart Blake and Michael Oswald, it was great to have you on Critical Mass, the radio show. I appreciate the time you guys put into thinking about the answers to these questions and the amount of content that you delivered in this interview today. I really do appreciate the fact that you guys are friends of Critical Mass, the radio show, and you're really a part of the Critical Mass business community. And again, I want to thank you for spending the time with our audience here this afternoon. Thank you very much, and have a good day, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
I hope you and our listening audience have enjoyed the show today. You know, our interviews are really designed to provide ideas and information that you can use to make better and more informed decisions. And clearly, the reason why I wanted to spend the entire show today with these two gentlemen is because this is an area that I do believe is underappreciated or maybe underserved in the small and mid-market business community, understanding risk and risk assessment. So I am delighted that I was able to bring Stuart and Michael on the show today and spend this amount of time with them. So, you know, if you'd like to learn more about what Critical is, that's easy to do. Check out our website as well, www.criticalmass4business.com. This is Rick Franzi, who had the pleasure of hosting today's show, saying, you know, you're listening to us live here on octalkradio.net. And until the next time I have a chance to speak with you, here's hoping that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You're listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net.